welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We're presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, good friend of the program, James Edwards, is here. Continuing our series of off-season recaps, we are going to go with the Central Division now. That's going to be Cleveland, Chicago, Detroit, Indiana, Milwaukee. James is here, and we're going to talk about all of those teams. I'm getting James like 5 minutes after Hamidou Diallo re-signed with the Detroit Pistons, so his life got a little bit frantic, a little bit quick here. How's it going, James?
It's going well, yeah. Like I told you before we started recording, everything's been good until you try to take somebody somewhere or do something that normal people get to do at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, out of all the times Hamidou could have resigned, it's when you're 30, 40 minutes away from your computer. But that's the nature of the business, and I should have known. Even though it's late, it's mid-August, I should have still just taken my computer with me. I'll never be able to escape it.
No, you're never going to be able to escape it. When this gets recorded, I will be off for 2 weeks and will have not thought about basketball for at least a week by the time I think this gets released. I don't know when I'll release it. I think it'll probably be in the second week of my vacation. So I could not be more excited to get away from basketball for 2 weeks. As much as I love it and as much as I really genuinely love working, it's been like 18 months. We needed a break here.
Yes, sir. I'm taking at least a week after tomorrow, maybe two. I'm with you. And I'm thinking about doing it for the first time, taking Twitter off my phone. I think I can do it now that Hami has signed, because I think Detroit is done.
See, it'll be funny.
Until they wave somebody.
Because I have told our editors, Sergio Gonzalez, who's like genuinely like maybe the best person I've ever worked with.
Shout out to Sergio. I love Sergio.
Yeah. Interpersonally, communication-wise, not just like a great boss, but like a friend and someone who is legitimately just like the best person on planet Earth.
A great person. Genuinely great person.
And I was like, yeah, like I'm planning on not opening my laptop unless Damian Lillard or Ben Simmons or like Bradley Beal or some shit, like unless one of these guys gets traded. And he was like, even then you are not opening your laptop. And I was like, Sergio, you and I both know that I don't have that kind of self-control. If something like that happens, I'll be around.
It's just the nature of how we operate when you're kind of stuck in this, as you know, Sam, this machine. Like, you don't want to feel left out of anything,
that's right,
especially of that magnitude.
Yeah, really, like if say the Detroit Pistons trade like Sadiq Bey for some ungodly reason, like they're not going to do it, but like say they would, right? I probably wouldn't come back for that. Like I'd be like, you know what? Yeah. That's fine. Whatever. Like James is great. He'll handle it. And you know,
and that would ruin my whole vacation.
Yeah. I'm sure other people will handle it. I don't need to be around for that, but Dame, Ben Simmons, etc. That's when you'll see me come around for sure. Okay.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen, Ben. Enjoy the break.
I hope it doesn't happen either. Okay, so let's talk. I know we only have like 40 minutes here. So let's talk about the Chicago Bulls. The Chicago Bulls signed and traded for Lonzo Ball, gave him a 4-year, right around $80 million is what it came in at when it was filed, according to Spotrac. And they traded Tomas Satoransky, Garrett Temple, and a second-round pick in order to stay over the cap when signing and trading for Lonzo Ball. They signed and traded for DeMar DeRozan, gave him a 3-year, $85 million deal, sending Thaddeus Young, Al-Farouq Aminu, a first and a second round pick to San Antonio. They signed Alex Caruso to a 4-year, $37 million deal. They signed Tony Bradley to a minimum contract. They re-signed Javante Green. They drafted Ayo Dosunmu and gave him a 2-year deal. And then they signed Marko Simonovic, their second round pick from last season, gave him a 3-year contract. Overall, I think Chicago had a really good offseason. I understand the consternation that some people have for this offseason, just in terms of limiting flexibility long term and potentially topping them out as like a 4 seed in the East. But I think that when you're Chicago, you're really just trying to get back an air of respectability, and that is valuable. And the moves that they made this summer, in my opinion, are going to push them out of the play-in range and into like the actual playoffs, and that has value whenever you're in a market like Chicago.
I agree 1,000%. I know a lot of people were given the side eye to the DeRozan deal, and I understand it like contractually and all that stuff, but this is the first time in a long time I'm genuinely interested in watching the Bulls. Like this I don't know how good this team is going to be. It could not work. Like, you look at it, there's a world in which it doesn't work, but I like want to find out. And I think for Chicago, after so many years of kind of just being blah, I don't know. Blahs, I mean, it is still the Bulls, so people watch. But if you're not a Bulls fan, I don't know many people that would turn on the Bulls. I have had my friends tell me, like, they're interested to see what the Bulls do. And I think that they were just at that point where they needed to, like, have some type of relevancy again. It's just been so long.
Yeah, they needed to be relevant again. Like, I get the questions about the DeMar DeRozan deal. He's like in a vacuum, maybe not worth $27 million anymore. And he's older. So there's a chance that the third year of that deal is not particularly good. I just kind of don't care.
I mean, yeah, I'm with you. I don't care.
He is really good. And I think that the people who have kind of brought him up as this ball dominant, like black hole of basketball, just haven't watched him play the last couple of years. Like, you watch him in San Antonio, he really has developed as a great passer. This is something that I mentioned late in his Toronto tenure, that he was really getting better as a passer. Nobody seemed to believe me then. It seems like the people who have watched him in San Antonio are starting to believe now that he is an actual passer. Like, you can throw him the ball on a second side action. He can get into the paint, and he makes high-level kick-out passes. He makes high-level dump-off passes. He's a really good pick-and-roll playmaker for a team that needs secondary creation next to Zach LaVine in the backcourt. Lonzo Ball is a transition, like, you know, out on the break, grab and go, we're going to get the offense going guy. And he's a great floor spacer in the half court, and he's good defensively. He does a lot of different stuff. And I think that's a great signing for them, too, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Zach LaVine needs help, though, in terms of creating offense. And I think that Nikola Vucevic is going to work as a really good pick-and-roll partner for both of those guys. They're going to have 48 minutes of really high-level offensive creation out on the court now, because you can stagger the Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan minutes. I think this is a home run, like, offseason for Chicago. The more I think about it, the more I really love what they did, even if I do agree with some of the criticism that they may have topped themselves out a bit. But I think that where they topped themselves out was more in trading for Vucevic as opposed to what they did this offseason. This offseason is a reaction to moving Wendell Carter and multiple first-round picks for Nikola Vucevic and trying to keep Zach LaVine. But once you do that and decide to go all in on the Vucevic-LaVine core, this is the best move that you can make following that move in order to give this core a chance, at least.
Yeah, I think what you just said hit the nail on the head. I think people, you could read the tea leaves, and it was very clear that Chicago last year making the Vucevic deal was tired of being blah. And they weren't very good after the trade, but it was set up for, like we just talked about, to do something this summer and to get it was a trickle down effect. It was the Vucevic trade was setting the tone for what was going to come this year, that they were going to be trying to be in the playoff picture, that they were going to try to not, like you said, push past the play-in and be a playoff team. Offensively, they're going to be just a joy to watch. I think on paper, it looks like it could be very fun. Defensively, obviously, there's questions, but you add a solid to good defender in Lonzo. Pat Williams, I think, is ready to take that leap. I think there's a world in which we see more effort from LaVine because he may be, I don't know if inspired is the right word, but this is by far the best team he's ever played on.
Agree, and watching him at the Olympics, he looked a lot more engaged defensively and was much better there.
Yep, so I like what they did. I understand the team-building aspect and not trying to put a ceiling on yourself, but in the NBA, for a market like Chicago, that logo has so much power, and it's just faded away in the background for the last, I mean, since the peak of Derrick Rose. It was time to make a move and to just be relevant again. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I think the time was now. It's just been too long since anybody's really cared about the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, totally agree. And then the Lonzo sign and trade, I think, was really, really smart as well. Those are the two big moves and the two big swings they made. The Lonzo Ball and pairing it particularly with Alex Caruso, because the thing that the DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine perimeter core doesn't have necessarily is a high level plus defender, because even if we think LaVine is going to be improved defensively, he's still probably not going to be much better than average to slightly above average, and I think that might even be a stretch. It would take an improvement for him to get to slightly above average for sure, but going out and getting Lonzo Ball, who's a really, really high level off ball playmaker defensively, and going to get Alex Caruso, who I thought had a genuine case to make the all defense team last year in Los Angeles. Those two guys fit really, really well with Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan as backcourt partners. I would think that, like, you get a lot of three man lineups with that four player, group that make a lot of sense and really, really work. I would imagine they're going to start all of Lonzo, Zach LaVine, and DeMar DeRozan, but Alex Caruso works with any of those guys on the court and should be a very high-level complementary piece for this group.
No, I agree with everything you said. I like the balance. I like even the subtleness of adding a Caruso who, I mean, obviously people know who he is. He played with the Lakers and had his meme moments and all that stuff, but like to your average casual basketball fan, it's a subtle move, but it's a good move. It fills a void for Chicago. Like you said, he can play with any of those guys. He adds he's a top-notch defender. And that was something that was missing, something they needed. Obviously, they're not going to be a super deep team, but loading up on guards and being able to stagger, I think, is going to kind of disguise that a little bit. And I just like what they did. I'm more so than anything, I'm interested in figuring out what it looks like and just monitoring that team for a whole year, because I think it could be fun.
Well, let's be real about the Caruso thing too. Like, I think a lot of non-Lakers fans, they see the excitement about Caruso and see like the memes and see, oh, he's just like the white dude with the headband, like, who plays for the Lakers, right? Like, exactly. Alex Caruso is this athletic dude who defends his ass off and like genuinely is a real high level NBA player. He is not a meme. I think that some of the hype goes off the rails a little bit sometimes, but he's a good player. Like, I get why Lakers fans were excited, and everything in that Lakers orbit is going to get overrated on some level. Yeah, I think that this team is going to be really good. I think that they are above the play-in level this year. I think they are much closer to the Boston Celtics in terms of talent than...
I was going to say that. I was going to use Boston as a reference. I totally agree.
Yeah, than like what they're getting credit for. This team just makes sense. I think they make a lot of sense offensively as a top seven-ish offense in the league. And if they can figure out what to do defensively, and Billy Donovan does have a pretty good track record of figuring out defensive schemes that make sense. Look, I think this is going to be a really good team. The question I ask at the end of every team that we do is, did this team get better or worse this offseason? I think Chicago got undeniably better, and I think it was a worthwhile endeavor for them to use the capital they needed to in order to get better.
Agreed across the board, man. Yeah, it's funny. People look at DeRozan's contract and kind of, like you said at the top of the show, and just kind of forget how good he was. Specifically last year, and how improved he was. And people are going to get an awakening when they hit the floor if everybody's healthy, I think.
in between the Cleveland and Chicago sections, I'm just going to make a quick note of the Larry Nance deal that happened over the weekend involving Lauri Markkanen and the Chicago Bulls. So I don't really want to belabor this to the point that I did on the Northwest Division podcast, because we talked about it for about 8 or 9 minutes on that show, and I don't know that we need to really delve deep, but I figure it's worth noting, given that there are probably some fans here just of the Bulls and Cavaliers that are probably wondering why I didn't discuss these. Obviously, these podcasts were pre-recorded, so let's just kind of dive in really quickly with Chicago, given that we just talked about Chicago. So it's a little bit surprising to me that they didn't just want Larry Nance as the sign and trade player and instead decided to go get a first. But I think that going and getting a first actually does open up some real trade avenues for them, because they're no longer bound by Stepien rules that had them pretty over a barrel in regard to trade flexibility moving forward after the trades for Nikola Vucevic and DeMar DeRozan. So just from a flexibility perspective, I understand it. I will note very briefly, I think Larry Nance would have helped Chicago quite a bit. He's the kind of flexible defensive asset in the front court that this team needs. They could have used him very similarly to how they used Thaddeus Young last year as kind of a small ball five. I kind of like that idea. Having said that, I think that this deal is a bigger deal for the Cavaliers than it is for Chicago. And as I mentioned in the Northwest Division podcast, I think there's a case to be made that Lauri Markkanen and Larry Nance, it makes sense to go with Markkanen over Nance, if only from a shooting perspective, because this Cavaliers team desperately needs shooting, and from an age timeline perspective. But I can't keep from helping myself in thinking that essentially what happened here was the Cavaliers traded a better player who was making less money over the next 2 years in Larry Nance, who, by the way, genuinely wanted to be there. He seemed to really embrace and love Cleveland in a real way, for a worse player making more money now, given that Lauri Markkanen's deal starts at $15.6 million over the next 3 years, and then has, I believe, that John Hollinger reported a $6 million guarantee in that fourth year of the deal. So I think that that's where I'm struggling a little bit. It is just, and I'm going to keep in the section that James and I recorded on Cleveland, because we dive deeply into the idea of signing Jarrett Allen for big money just moments essentially after drafting Evan Mobley, and why that's not something I would have done. I feel the same about Lauri Markkanen, if only because what this Markkanen deal has done is it locks them into even more money long-term into the front court, because Markkanen is a 4-5. You can't play him at the 3. He doesn't have the mobility defensively to do that. And I guess that you can make the case that it now allows them to bring Evan Mobley along slowly, but I don't see this team as a playoff contender. I think that you're going to want to play Evan Mobley and get as many minutes into him as he can. And by the way, I think he's probably going to be better than Jared Allen immediately anyway, even with the lack of strength that he has. So you've essentially locked in $15 to $16 million a year on Lauri Markkanen, after locking in $20 million a year flat over the next 5 years on Jared Allen. And that's $36 million locked up in your front court on top of the Kevin Love deal that, I mean, it seems like Kevin Love is not long for this roster at this point. But even if he gives back $10 million, let's say, it still means that there's $50 million over the next 2 years, something like that, on this roster that they're going to have to deal with on their cap sheet over the next 2 years. And that's if they choose not to stretch him over the next 5 years, which would mean an even longer situation to deal with Kevin Love contract. And I just would not prolong the sadness on this. I would just rip the Band-Aid off and, you know, get as much back as you can on the buyout and move forward. But it just, again, it seems like Cleveland continues to just go and get these tall guys that aren't very flexible and versatile within the modern game, in Jared Allen and in Lauri Markkanen, because while they're good players, they just are guys that we don't know how effective they're going to be in playoff basketball at the end of the day. And we don't know how effective Colin Sexton and Darius Garland are going to be in playoff basketball at the end of the day. So everything you're about to hear in terms of my questions regarding Cleveland's direction with James Edwards, that still stands at this point with the Cavs. I didn't really love this move for them to go out and get Lauri Markkanen. And it just continues to follow the trajectory of Cleveland moves that I haven't really understood. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just like totally missing what Kobe Altman's vision is here. And on some level, it's been a while since Cleveland has been able to attract good players. So going out and being able to convince Lauri Markkanen to sign this offer sheet and then negotiate a sign and trade with Chicago, like, that's a win for Cleveland on some level. It's just the big picture that I still struggle to really navigate. And even small picture, looking at the just micro of this, I'm really struggling a little bit to navigate my thoughts on moving Larry Nance for Lauri Markkanen, given that Nance wanted to be there and that he's a better player than Markkanen. Here's the rest of the Cleveland conversation with James Edwards. All right, let's go to Cleveland. The big one is that they drafted Evan Mobley. They still haven't made a decision yet on the Colin Sexton potential extension or anything like that. So it's possible that could happen at some point in the next couple weeks. Look, I think that anything, you know, if they could get them to 480 or less, it's probably a win. If anything over 497, which is what Terry Rozier got, I think is probably a questionable deal, because I don't even really love the Rozier deal. I'll just like kind of say that in case something happens in the next couple weeks. But they signed Jarrett Allen to a 5-year, $100 million deal, and they traded Taurean Prince for Ricky Rubio. And I believe they moved a second round pick within that deal to get Rubio. This is just going to be just kind of a shorter one because they didn't do a ton. But I've gotten a lot of flack for saying that I don't think I would personally want to be the executive that pays Jarrett Allen 5 years, $100 million. It's not that I think he's a bad player. I think he's basically the line for what is like a league average starting center in today's NBA. And I just don't know that I want to pay my league average starting center a $100 million contract at the end of the day.
Yeah, I don't know if the confidence is there that you're going to get your bang for your buck.
Yeah, I don't think that really has a chance of being a plus value deal.
Exactly.
Just like looking at what Steven Adams got, like everyone complained about the Steven Adams 2-year, $36 million extension last year that he got from New Orleans. And part of that was team fit, right? He's not the best fit with Zion Williamson necessarily, and I get that. But like Steven Adams, I think, is a better overall player than Jared Allen. I get that Jared Allen can finish above the rim at a better level than what Steven Adams can, and the counting numbers look a little bit better for Jared Allen. But I think Steven Adams is a much better overall defender than what Jared Allen is. And if we're like asking, I would rather have Steven Adams right now than Jared Allen. Jared Allen's 23 years old, but to lock in to a center for 5 years, $20 million, and you know, me personally evaluating Jared Allen as not really having a chance to be like an all-NBA type center, probably be an all-star type center. Like, I still think Larry Nance is a better player than Jared Allen. It's just like, it's a little bit tough for me, I guess, to wrap my head around that deal.
No, and I get where you're coming from. I like Jared Allen, but I feel like if I'm in those shoes, Kobe Altman's shoes, I wouldn't have done 5 for $100 because of the reasons you said. I don't know if I'm going to get my bang for my buck. I don't know if it's going to be a positive contract. I don't see him as an all-star ever. I think there are better options out there for what the Cavs could use in terms of, like you mentioned, in comparison to Steven Adams, like defensively for much cheaper. But like
you could get Robin Lopez for 1 year, yeah. $5 million on the market this year. Jared Allen's better than Robin Lopez, but I don't know that he's like drastically better than Robin Lopez.
Agreed. Like I would go somebody like Nerlens Noel for super cheap.
Right.
And I would have a rim running big who can defend. Like that would have been fine for me.
Yeah. Nerlens Noel essentially got a 2 year, $18 million deal this summer. Like he got a third year team option for like $10 million. But that deal, he's out in 2 years, 18, if it doesn't work.
Yep.
Nerlens is pretty damn close to as effective as Jared Allen is right now, especially when you account for defensive flexibility that Nerlens provides. Away from the rim, he's just as good of a rim protector, if not, he's actually a better rim protector, I think, than what Jared Allen is. Maybe not quite the rebounder in terms of controlling the defensive glass, but I mean, much better, much more impactful, I think, defensively than what Jared Allen is, even if, again, he doesn't necessarily have that, like, rim running and, like, gravitational threat offensively that Jared has.
No, we're in lockstep with that. And I just, for many years, not many years, but the last few years, I kind of just look at this Cavs roster and, like, Evan Mobley's kind of the first guy that I really like that they got. Like I still don't love the Garland, Sexland. I don't love that backcourt.
Yeah. I like Darius Garland a lot, and I like Colin Sexton. I don't like a reasonable amount. I don't like the pairing.
Yeah, I don't like the pairing. I thought it was weird when they got Garland having had Sexton, but I know you like Garland more, fine. Figure it out down the line, but it seems like there's a chance they keep Sexton. It's not on the cards, obviously, and I don't know if Okoro can reach a positive offensive ceiling. The Kevin Love situation's looming. What do you do with Larry Nance? Is a guy that could get you something? Like I think they're still straddling the line of like, yeah, we're clearly rebuilding, but like we're kind of stuck with some vets, and it wouldn't be. I just don't like the team. I don't like the direction. It's just very muddy over there, and it has been for a few years.
Well, and by the time a lot of the money comes off the books, because they've given Jared Allen this money, if they decide to give Colin Sexton his money as well, they're going to be pretty expensive again, like on top of they're going to be expensive without having open like real cap space with flexibility to be able to go out and like rent out the cap space for first round picks and assets to be able to build that way. Or like, look, Cleveland's not like the sexiest free agency market, obviously, but you know, maybe you can find a fit that works for you in free agency. Like I just wouldn't want to lock in my roster at this early stage of their development. But you know, I think a lot of these pieces are flexible enough in the trade market to where, at least right now, to where they can kind of rearrange on the fly if they have to. Yeah, and like the other part of the Jared Allen move is too, like I understand that you don't want Evan Mobley playing center. Like, you know, it's summer league this year. You know, Evan Mobley got pushed around.
Yep.
But you just gave Jared Allen a 5-year contract. I mean, Evan Mobley probably should be playing the center position by year three of that 5-year contract to Jared Allen. So you have 3 extra years of Allen, and they're probably both going to be centers in an NBA that's downsizing. And again, like I'm a little bit worried about if that Allen deal is an actual asset as opposed to something you have to like get off of, or just something that doesn't return you much in terms of the trade. So I don't know. Look, it's yeah. I understand why Cleveland did it. Like Cleveland needs to retain talent on some level, but this is
kill the value of that talent by handing out a massive contract.
Yeah, or you could have just kept the late first round pick that you moved for Jared Allen. And gotten like a cheap young player who wasn't about to get $20 million on your cap sheet. you know, like, look, we're kind of parsing and going in circles a little bit. I don't love the way that this roster is built. I don't love the way that Kobe Altman has operated for a while now. How much of it is Kobe Altman? How much of it is like the ownership group? Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it's like, I don't love the way that Cleveland is building their roster. They still don't have any wings that can shoot, really.
No.
Right? Like,
yeah, like the NBA is going bigger in the backcourt and smaller up front, and they're doing the opposite. And it always kind of reminded me, I remember Stan Van Gundy said this when the Pistons made the trade for Blake. It's like somebody asked him about the league going smaller. He's like, yeah, well, teams are going to have to adapt to us. And it's like, the Mobley pick I get and I love. I love Evan Mobley, and that's totally fine. It's just him with Jarrett is a little – it's you want, like you said earlier, you want Evan to eventually be the center.
Yeah, that's where you get his most marginal value.
Exactly. And then you look at the backcourt, and it's like, I like Garland, and I don't dislike Sexton. I like Sexton for a certain price, but it's such a small backcourt, and it's just a very – just a weirdly pieced together team, and it's. I mean, we were saying that even before the Evan Mobley pick, which, as much as we love Mobley, it made the team even more weird. It's just a weird roster, and I'm very curious. Like, I think it would be. There's no way I would just trade Sexton. I would if
you I think get I something would too. Back.
And it's primarily because you don't want to, like you said, be tied to all this money. And you're not sure if your team's any good.
Yep.
I'm voting no. They're not very good. I don't feel confident that they would safely play a playoff team in the next, unless Mobley's just the greatest ever, in the next 4 years.
Yeah. Look, I would hope they make the playoffs in the next 4 years, but like,
I wouldn't put money on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's a couple years away from being great. I do think Evan Mobley is going to be great, and I don't have a problem with the pick. It's more the decision making around the pick.
Exactly.
I don't think this team is going to be much better next year. Like, they won 22, they went 22-50, so they won the equivalent of, like, let's say 26 games in a 82 game season. I don't think they're going to be much better than that this year. I really don't.
I'm with you. If we do the at the end of the every team, do they get better? I mean, adding Evan Mobley, it doesn't hurt anybody, but yeah. I don't think they got better for next season. I agree.
Yeah, the answer is like, yes, I guess they got better, but did they get marginally better as compared to the rest of the East? I do not think so. No.
Nope.
Let's take a quick commercial break and we'll be back. All right, we're up on the team that James covers, the Detroit Pistons. They drafted Cade Cunningham, as well as Isaiah Livers, Luka Garza, and Balša Koprivica. Oh, boy. They signed Kelly Olynyk to a 3-year, $37 million deal. They signed Corey Joseph to a 2-year, $10 million deal. They re-signed Hamidou Diallo to a 2-year, $10 million deal. They signed Frank Jackson to a 2-year, $6 million deal. They signed Trey Lyles to a minimum contract. They signed Sabin Lee to a 3-year deal. They signed Rodney Magruder to a minimum deal. And they traded Mason Plumlee to get off of his contract, using the 37th overall pick and bringing back that dear sweet Balša Koprivica pick. James, did I miss anything there? They had a busy offseason.
No, you got everything. Yeah, Troy went into the offseason telling us that he was just going to bring back his players, and that's what he did. Obviously Olynyk wasn't, but other than that, everybody else was, and Trey, everybody else was on the roster last year.
So this is weird insofar as they made a lot of moves and they got their centerpiece, right?
Yep.
But like, it's a very consequential offseason because they got Cade Cunningham and because like they now have their key building block.
Yep.
I don't know that it was like a particularly interesting offseason to talk about. Like, it was a smart offseason for Detroit, I thought. They handled their business.
I think the big thing with Detroit, and I mean, they've always kind of thrown out bits and pieces of this happening and this, that this was going to, how it was, this is how it would play out. It's, their eyes are on next year's free agency and the year after that. They have, Blake's money comes off the books after this year. They have a ton of cap space. I think what was important for them was getting lotto luck and getting that centerpiece, using this year as another development year to get him adjusted. Sadiq, Isaiah, Killian. It's essentially the same roster. You're just trading the vertical threat of Mason Plumlee for a floor spacer in Kelly Olynyk. So they're losing a true rim-running big, and Mason wasn't the best in the world at that, but he was serviceable for a floor spacer who shot the hell out of the ball with the Rockets. So this is going to be another, like, they're not going to come out. I don't think they'll come out and say that they want to make the play-in. I think they'll say if they make the play-in, great, because that means something probably went right with a few of their young players. And if they don't, that's fine too, because they could use some more talent. So I think they're in a good position where there's still no expectations. The city is excited because there's actually like something to get behind. And they have a ton of cap space coming up. And Troy, aside from being a great talent evaluator, part of his appeal to the organization was he has great relationships with players around the league. So I think this year was going to be another let's just roll the dice, see what happens. And if we do well, great. That means something went well. And if not, well, we can load up, make some decisions on some of the young guys, and get in some veterans here to start going for something substantial in the next year or two.
I saw some people complain about the Kelly Olynyk deal, and I was like, why? Like, he's good at basketball, and they need floor spacers to help Cade Cunningham develop. Like, this is a completely reasonable contract to give someone like Kelly Olynyk, who can really shoot the basketball and play both the four and the five to an extent, but you're probably going to play him more at the five. Having said that, you can play him, I think, with Isaiah Stewart, and they can kind of share responsibilities based off of the matchups that you have. I'm a big fan. I think it was a really smart developmental move for the Detroit Pistons, and I don't think they're going to have problems getting off of that contract unless Kelly Olynyk gets hurt and then like can't defend anybody ever again. I thought this was like a smart offseason. They got Diallo on a reasonable deal, 2 years, $10 million. That happened literally right as like we started recording.
Second year team option.
That's a great deal. I liked what I saw from Sabin Lee last year. Luka Garza, I'll be honest, I thought it was insane that he made second team all summer league. But at the end of the day, he was a great second round pick at summer league. I thought he played really, really well offensively, looked like a potential stretch big. I think Isaiah Livers has a shot to be a real floor spacer as a wing at 6'7" to space the floor next to Cade Cunningham. They're building a roster that makes sense next to Cade as he is in his developmental years, and that's really all you can ask for from Detroit at this point, right?
Yep. Detroit has gotten itself in trouble over the last decade plus by trying to speed up the process. This rebuild that they really started last year should have started many years ago, probably. And now they are here and they're being patient, and it's worked out. I mean, you get the number one pick in a great draft. You hit on, I think we would all agree, two of the three last year with one still up in the air. Sabin Lee looks like he could be at minimum a long time backup point guard at minimum.
Yep.
And that's a second round pick. Isaiah Livers, I agree with you, seems to be a long time floor spacer. So Dwayne Casey was pleading for shooting. They got three shooters in this year's draft. Sadiq Bey last year. Isaiah Stewart has the potential to be a floor spacer with more time. They're building the roster the right way. They're being patient. And I think that is all Detroit fans have wanted for quite some time.
Did they get better? Yes, they got better, if only because they have Cade Cunningham now, and Cade Cunningham is a star. Let's go to Indiana. Indiana had a quiet offseason because their big addition was firing Nate Bjorkgren and bringing in Rick Carlisle, which is about as good of a coaching upgrade as any team will have this offseason. They traded Aaron Holiday and pick number 31 in order to draft Isaiah Jackson at number 22. They drafted Chris Duarte. They re-signed TJ McConnell to a four-year, $34 million deal. And they traded Doug McDermott and a future second in order to open a trade exception, which I think should be somewhere in the ballpark of like 13 to 14 million. This was just a solid, you know, we're running it back off season because we think our coach was an absolute nightmare last year. And we think we have talent and want to see what that talent is.
Yeah. Like, it's nothing to get excited about. If you thought that the Pacers were poorly coached, which it, from all accounts they were, and they had a decent roster, which I think they do, they should be for sure in the play-in range, maybe a solidified playoff team. I like the roster. You're getting TJ Warren back this year. I'm a Caris LeVert guy. Just hope he stays healthy. I still think there's something to be done there with Miles Turner. I like Miles, and I'm surprised that a team, I mean, Boston's always the team that's kind of linked with him, hasn't gone for him.
Yeah.
Or if they did and didn't get, I don't know. Danny Ainge is always so close to getting guys. I like the team. I think that Turner eventually gets traded at some point this season, but I don't know. I think they're, I don't know. It's the Pacers. You always want to doubt them, and then they end up winning 44 games, 43 games. And I feel like this team could easily win mid-40s games. I don't see them losing. I don't see them winning, barring injury, like 32 or less.
Well, here's the thing. So I agree generally with the construct of running this back to see what works with Rick Carlisle and what doesn't. I do think that more than any team in the league, they are probably set up for mid-season trades because Agreed. There are guys like Malcolm Brogdon, there are guys like Caris LeVert, TJ Warren is an expiring year. I believe Brogdon is also an expiring this year. They have the Miles Turner, Domantas Sabonis situation. There are just a lot of different factors that could confluence together to where after Rick Carlisle gets a feel for what he has, gets a feel for what he likes, what will work in the scheme, they could make some moves in order to just kind of change up the shaping of this roster because it does need a shakeup. Like, I understand if Pacers fans, I'm sorry, are a little bit frustrated with a lack of inaction in regard to shaking up this roster. But I think that I'm cool with them kind of deciding, hey, let's see what we've got early in the season. Let's see if it was just like total coaching malpractice last year that made us fail and have a losing record, not make the playoffs. And if it doesn't work, we'll be mobile and we'll be flexible and adjust on the fly.
No, you hit the nail on the head again. I think it is worth figuring out if getting a, not only getting rid of the previous coach, but upgrading to one of the best coaches in the league for a roster that is a solid roster. Like, I like a lot of the guys on here, and yep. Figuring out is if this works, cool, let's roll with it, and we'll be the perennial Pacers where we're right there, 6-7 seed, and frustrate somebody in the playoffs, and we'll see what happens from there. And then if that doesn't work out, you have interesting pieces that teams would want. Like, I would think if it doesn't work out, I think Caris LeVert would be somebody of interest to like somebody like Detroit. They have a lot of Michigan people in that front office. They could use a two guard. Malcolm Brogdon, is who doesn't like Malcolm Brogdon? And Miles Turner, again, I know people are a little bit more down on him as the years go on, but he's still a very good basketball player. So there's a lot of things they can do, but I agree the first thing that they need to try is let's just find out if a coach change propels us to the tier we want to be at or fine being at, I should say.
Yeah, did they get better this offseason? yes, they got better because they hired Rick Carlisle. Did they get better on the court this offseason? No, they didn't. Like, they bring in Chris Duarte, who I think is going to be helpful. Like, I think he's going to be able to play immediately. But did they get
back TJ Warren?
Yeah, like, did they get drastically better? Probably not, but they will win more games next year. Did they get better on paper? No. Did they get better in reality? Yeah, this is going to be a better team next year for sure, I think.
Agreed.
Okay, last team here. The Milwaukee Bucks, your NBA champions. They re-signed Bobby Portis. They traded for Grayson Allen with Sam Merrill and 2 second-round picks. They drafted Sandro Mamukelashvili and Yorios Kalatzaitis, or Kalatzakis, I'm sorry. I always fuck his name
up. I defer to you on that one.
Kalatzakis was a choice on draft night. We'll go with that. Rodney Hood got signed in the hopes that he can regain some of the form that made us excited about him early in his career. They signed Shemi Ojeleye to a minimum contract. They signed George Hill to a 2-year, $8 million deal, and they re-signed Thanasis Antetokounmpo, I believe, to like a 2-year, $5.5-6 million deal. This team did what an NBA champion does. They essentially ran it back. They replaced Bryn Forbes with George Hill. They bring in Shemi Ojeleye, who can kind of act, I think, as a bit of a low usage potential defensive, guy on forwards that will in some level replace PJ Tucker. They got Bobby Portis. Yeah, they brought Bobby Portis back in order to, kind of shore up that center position, take a flyer.
Grayson trade.
Yeah, I really liked that move for them. I thought it made sense for them at a high level. I thought that move made sense for both teams, but I thought it really made sense for Milwaukee to go out and get a guy that can be helpful this year in Grayson Allen. And hope Rodney Hood still has something left in the tank after all of the injuries have kind of knocked him off of the NBA radar almost entirely, it feels like, at this point. Man, when he was with Utah back in like the mid-2010s, he looked like he was going to be a genuine, like, potential high-level player in the NBA.
I hope he regains some of that, because he was fun to watch those Utah teams. And there was that run, I forget what year. I don't remember what year, but there was, there were Rodney Hood moments. And it'd be cool to see him again. And it's a low risk, medium reward. I like that signing. I like the Grayson Allen move, getting a guy who can be an NBA player. Had to bring back Bobby, or Milwaukee would riot.
Yep.
Yeah. I have a question. My biggest worry for the Bucks, I'd like to get your thoughts on this, is they did it. They only, in my mind, and just the feel of it, they just had to get it done once. Obviously, they're going to try to repeat, but the pressure to get that one is gone. And I just wonder if that hunger is going to be there. I don't think it's going to be there this year without a significant roster shakeup, which they didn't have.
So the hunger thing doesn't worry me as much, because I think that Giannis is just like a force of personality in terms of like driving an organization forward. I don't think he's going to be satisfied with one. And I think that like Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton, like those guys aren't going to be satisfied with one. Fair. Where I'm a little bit worried with Milwaukee is just burnout at this point. They played a long season. We're getting a shortened off season again this year. Then Chris Middleton and Drew went to play in the Olympics, so their offseason was even shorter than what you typically get. I'm not sure if Dante DiVincenzo is really going to get an offseason due to his injury. Do they potentially just look a little bit burnt out next year? I think is kind of where I'm at.
That was kind of, I guess, part of my point too, like a culmination of being burnt out to the point where it's like if things aren't going great, to start, like, they're going to be in the playoffs no matter what. But I'm saying, like, maybe if things get tough in the playoffs, they're just burnt out. It's like, well, we got one. We got, like, maybe you just don't see the game seven against the Nets, or you don't see the game against Atlanta. four, three. I just wonder if you, not that they won't try, but just a combination of being burnt out and maybe just that in the back of your mind, well, I'm tired, man, and we got one. I just wonder if that could creep in pressure situations this year, unlike last year where they were just poised and hungry and had been in big moments before and kind of smelt blood in the water. So I agree. I think the burnout thing is a big thing, and I should have prefaced my theory with that as well, because I do think that's part of the factor in maybe some of the hunger. Individually, these guys are hungry. Like, nobody questions Drew, Giannis, Chris, but I could see if there's just a little too tired, a little too much exhaustion, that maybe you don't push through like you did in the summer of 2021.
Yeah, or they just might not have the juice to push through.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Like, that's long-winded way of saying they might not just have the juice.
Yeah, like, it just, they might be, the NBA, they're essentially going to have played three back-to-back long NBA seasons in their case. Yeah. And I mean, the Bucks played, God, how many games this season? They played like long NBA playoff series in the last three series. Like, those were, I think they played like 17 games. They played like 90 games last year. And then Drew and Chris went and played, what, seven more in the Olympics, six more in the Olympics? I mean, it's going to be tough, I think, for them. It's going to be tough for them to bounce back and be good. In terms of just energy and recovery, because playing in the NBA is really fucking hard. But we'll see. I mean, I think that anytime you have Giannis is just an incredible driving force in terms of positive energy, in terms of, like, maybe being a cyborg. Like, we can't confirm or deny that Giannis is a cyborg.
I'm leaning more toward he definitely is a cyborg.
And yeah, I'm glad that you brought up the Grayson thing, because I thought that was a smart move for them to get him for a cheap contract year. And he wasn't bad for Memphis last year. I thought he was pretty useful.
Yeah, we know he's an NBA player. We weren't sure about Sam Merrill yet. I know people like him, but we weren't sure yet. We know Grayson can play in the NBA. And yeah, I mean, it doesn't hurt to add another floor spacer who's scrappy in his own right. It's just a subtle move that I like. You replace some of the Bryn Forbes shooting and add a little bit more size. The Semi Ojeleye, like, that's not a bad replacement for PJ, who kind of really tailed off as the playoffs went on. But they fixed up around the margins. Now the question is, do the big fellas got enough juice to go do it one more time?
Yep. James, tell the people where they can find your work. Tell the people what's going on with you.
Yeah, I'm at The Athletic. Just go to the Pistons tab and you will find everything you need regarding Detroit basketball. I'm on Twitter at JL Edwards III. I do a podcast, the Bun and Cardigan Show, a Pistons podcast. We drop once a week right now in the off season on Thursdays. I'm also often on Point of Contention, the Athletic podcast, and Basket Buds. So, yeah, I'm all over here, and thank you for having me, Sam. It's always a joy talking to you, man. And your draft coverage, as always, was immaculate. I don't know how you do it, but you're the best at it. And you're a very good friend and teammate. And just going through draft season, like, I always feel good because I know I got Sam in the back pocket. So if I have any questions or just anything, I know I got you. So hope you enjoy this time off, man, because you deserve it. And yeah, don't open your laptop, please.
That was far too nice to end. Many compliments to end on me with this podcast. We need to find a way to knock me down a peg before we finish this thing. Yeah, like, did I, like, totally fuck up on Jalen Johnson? Yes, I did. Like, Jalen Johnson looked great at Summer League. Good God. I may have made a mistake ranking him 25.
But that stuff happens. That's fine. It's for me, personally, I like going to you because I know you know your stuff. Yeah. You're great at what you do. The information, the stories you put out, we all read them all to brush up and to get up to speed, and nobody does it like you, man. You're a machine. You're gonna get some of that stuff wrong. It always happens.
Oh, it happens. James, I appreciate that, man. This has been the Game Theory Podcast. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe, do everything you can to support the show. We will be back at some point this week with another off-season breakdown. Or if this is the last one I release, I'll just be back next week talking about basketball at some point. But until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.